we can't go back to pre-Vatican II and say, well, it'd be easier if we just go back to Vatican I and start over, because there's such great value to what Vatican II did if we actually look at what it said in those documents.
Welcome back into another episode of the Deacon in the Dock podcast. This is your doc, and that over there is
the deacon. Welcome. I'm Mike Beauvais, and our doc is Thaddeus Romanski, and we're going to do our second episode of season two.
Second episode of season two. Like we said on the first episode, we're going to be continuing our musings about the Second Vatican Council. And we're also going to take time to talk about things Eucharistic revival, because that's an important event that's going on in the life of the church right now, isn't it?
Yes, they've set aside, well, it started out 3 years, but it's probably going to extend beyond that.
Oh, really? I hadn't gotten that memo from the Vatican.
Well, you have to be on the Pope's email list. I'm sorry.
Nice.
But the whole gist of the Eucharistic revival is to make sure that we as Catholics gain or regain a new appreciation for the true presence, what it means for us as Catholics. And so during our sessions, we're going to talk a little bit about the things that are going to be going on and the things that we can do as Catholics to help ourselves get a new appreciation or a renewed appreciation for the real presence.
And I think maybe a tie there to the Second Vatican Council is it's often quoted that it's the source and summit of our faith. It's the font and apex. And I learned that the font and apex is in Sacrosanctum Concilium. The source and the summit is actually in Lumen Gentium.
Yes. But
those are images quoted a lot, but I think all of us, myself included, I need to understand and not just understand, but believe in the fiber of my being better. Why is it the source or the font of my faith? Why is it the apex or the summit of my faith? I don't necessarily always truly appreciate and believe with the kind of wonder and awe that deserves.
Yes, and I think this is going to be helpful for all of us to get our minds around the idea that each time that we receive the Eucharist, mm-hmm. it is in a way a new beginning for us mm-hmm. to be Christ to others, to show that image, that icon of Christ to the world around us.
Right.
So in a way, that is the source of our faith leading out of the church.
Right.
But it's also the summit. It is where we're returning to, because our goal is the wedding feast of the Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So we leave from the Eucharist to work back to the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was approaching communion on Sunday, and I remember praying, reconfigure me, Lord. Reconfigure mm-hmm. me, Lord. Reconfigure me, Lord. And what I was asking for was that receiving him in the Eucharist that day would take a little bit step towards ordering my desires properly, ordering my priorities properly, put them in the right order and hierarchy, reconfigure me the way that we might reconfigure a software, anything that has multiple parts of it to make it work as it should.
Yes. And this brings to mind the quote, and the name slipped my mind. It'll come back to me as soon as we finish this podcast. But the idea that in order to be a Christian, what we really just have to do is to love what Jesus loved on the cross and to hate what Jesus hated on the cross.
Mm.
And this is that refigurement. How do I get to that point where It is second nature to me. It is part of who I am, that I love those things that Jesus loves, and that I disdain those things that Jesus would not want in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess that that brings us then to maybe the main part of our subject today, of our episode today, which is we wanted to do a little bit of what kind of introduction to the Reclaiming Vatican II book. That's what one of our study sessions is going to be on this fall. Deacon Mike and I are going to be leading study sessions on this Reclaiming Vatican II book, which we're going to talk about in a second. But we're also going to be having one session of the Vatican II document study at St. Joseph's as well. You can check redsearadio.org for the dates and times on those studies. And we also have a Vatican II document study session going in Central Texas this fall too. It's going to be starting. So go to redsearadio.org to get those times and to sign up.
And the document study was intended to introduce people to what the documents actually said, what was in there. Because, again, most of the people that have heard about Vatican II, the phrase that they've heard most often is the spirit of Vatican II.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the document study was intended to do is, rather than focus on the spirit of Vatican II, to focus on the actual writings of Vatican II. This is what the documents actually said. And so the book study on Reclaiming Vatican II is going to focus on the idea that, how do we get back to the actual intent of the documents, especially the liturgical side of things, but also the other three documents, Lumen Gentium, Gaudium et Spes, and
De Verbum.
De Verbum, thank you. And take a look at what were they intended to inspire in the church, because that's what Vatican II was all about, inspiring a renewal of the enthusiasm of the people for their faith.
Now, it's got a very daring— this is by Father Blake Britton. He is a priest in the Diocese of Tampa. Oh, I was close. Diocese of Orlando. In the back of the book, it says he's a regular contributor to the Word on Fire Institute's blog, and it's an evangelization and culture journal. He has a bachelor's degree in philosophy, contributes to EWTN, Catholic Channel. He's trained in classical Latin, biblical Greek. So he's got some good credentials.
Gravitas.
A little bit of gravitas. It's published by Word on Fire in collaboration with Ave Maria Press. But it's got a very challenging subtitle, or a bold subtitle. It's what it really said, it being Vatican II, what it really said, what it means, and how it calls us to renew the church. That's a pretty bold claim that Father Blake is going to tell us what Vatican II really said and what it means for us.
Yes, he doesn't hesitate to step out there and say—
he's putting himself out there, as they say.
Listen, folks, I know what we should be doing.
And we're the study class, the study session, will be— part of what we'll do is we'll see, is he accurate? Did he really do a good job of telling us what it really means, what it really said, and how we can renew the church by reclaiming Vatican II? Why do you think he took the term reclaiming, or what do you think he's driving at with the idea of reclaiming it? Not reinterpreting it or renewing it, or says renew the church, but we need to reclaim Vatican II in order to do that.
Well, basically what he's saying is that perhaps in certain instances, the intent of Vatican II was not carried out reliance on what the documents actually said. And so what he says is, what we need to do is reclaim the actual intent of the documents in the life of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And several points that he makes is that this is not just intended to address some of the more progressive things that have happened in the church, but also to caution that we can't go back to pre-Vatican II and say, well, it'd be easier if we just go back to Vatican I and start over, because there's such great value to what Vatican II did. If we actually look at what it said in those documents.
Right, right. I think that to my memory, you know, he says in here at the beginning, his foreword by the foreword by John Cavadini, who's a professor of theology. He says, polarization over the Second Vatican Council has reached a new degree of intensity, at least in the public eye. And to my memory, that seems really to be tied very directly to the most recent spate of scandals that began in 2018 with the now Mr. McCarrick.
Yes.
Right? That's where you really seem to have a ramping up, especially in the Catholic Twitter sphere, the Catholic blogosphere, of not just your kind of usual suspects of progressively minded Catholics or liberal Catholics who wanted, who were dismayed by the pontificates of Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI in trying to institute that reform of the reform. But a new group that Father Blake identifies as ultra-traditionalists, or sometimes they're called radical traditionalists, who, like you're saying, see the problems in the church as equated with the Second Vatican Council, that they're directly related to the Second Vatican Council, that the council itself, not the way that it was interpreted, which is a fairly standard or has been a standard critique, but that the council itself is the problem and needs to be erased, forgotten about.
Yes, basically, we want to redo.
So that's kind of an encapsulation of what I think Professor Cavadini is doing when he says that in that shorthand in the foreword. And I think that's the prompting of Father Blake's book, is to try to answer that charge, right?
Yes, and I find that he does such a wonderful job of basically balancing, being balanced in how he addresses both sides of the issue and cautioning against the extremes on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And because, again, if we look at the more progressive side of things, you know, it's very easy to see after reading the documents that a lot of the changes resulting from supposedly Vatican II are not grounded in the documents of Vatican II.
Mm-hmm.
But also a lot of the criticism of Vatican II can't actually be placed on the documents, because the documents are extremely continuous of the tradition of the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're quite robust, especially when you make sure to read one document in conversation with the other documents, and you don't take a term or a phrasing kind of out of context, but you recall, or at least, or you know what's been established or defined in another document that's a part of the council's texts. So what did you think about, and I think that this will be very, very enlightening to the people that take the class, his idea of the paracouncil, which he borrows from the French theologian, Henri de Lubac.
Well, I thought that this was a very, very appropriate way of looking at this, that what we had was the actual council, which produced these wonderful documents that we studied in the document study, but that there was almost another council that came into existence mostly through theologians, and a lot of them progressive theologians, mm-hmm. who interpreted the council and did not, most of the time, stay true to what the council actually said.
Well, I think that there's a great example of that, in my opinion, in Humana Vitae, which we talked about on the previous episode. We talked about how there were a large group of theologians, so large of a group and so singular-minded that they organized in advance of the release of the Humana Vitae to take out a full-page ad in the New York Times protesting against the teaching of the document and dissenting against it.
Yes.
And these same theologians and teachers had been telling Catholics for years that the Pope was going to come out and approve artificial contraception
in certain instances.
In certain instances, but that door was going to be,
yes,
open. That change was going to be made in teaching. And so, yeah, I think it's. I don't see whether you agree with that or not, right? Whether you think that was a good thing or a bad thing that they did that, I don't think you can dispute that there was an active effort to prepare the ground.
Yes. And I think this is, and we see this in the secular world also, the effort by certain individuals to basically flood the airwaves, mm-hmm. with a certain viewpoint, mm-hmm. in hope of convincing everyone else that they should think that same thing.
Right.
And so we saw this with Humana Vitae. We saw it to a certain extent with Second Vatican Council,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the
changes in the Mass.
The changes in the Mass.
Or the reform of the liturgy. Let's not say change, but
right.
The reform of the liturgy.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of it was, if not directly contrary to what Sacrosanctum Concilium says, certainly nowhere in the reasonable interpretation of what Sacrosanctum Concilium laid out. And so when we get into the book, one of the points he makes is that, for instance, Ad Orientem is never mentioned in any of the documents.
It's absolutely silent on the orientation of the priest.
And so that notion that this should change, you might say, was just plucked out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, when we're talking about reclaiming Vatican II, the understanding is that let's look at what it actually says and perhaps get back to the source of the documents.
Do you think as we wrap up here, I mean, do you think that with enough study and understanding and learning that we could get everyday Catholics comfortable with reclaiming the idea of ad orientem worship?
Yes. Reading Father Britton's take on this, as with in 2011 when we changed the translation of the Mass,
right.
Everything's doable if you provide enough information, enough education, and enough reasons why it is that you're doing what you're doing. People will be accepting of this.
Right.
It's drastic changes that people dislike, me in particular, and therefore the church has an obligation to inform the laity, mm-hmm. of why it's necessary to do this and how this is beneficial.
And he, you know, I don't want to make this about the Holy Father, but when we talk about moving people towards adoriant and worship. You know, I think it was 2017, maybe 2019. I think it was 2019, in advance of Advent 2019, when Cardinal Sarah, who was the head of the dicastery on the liturgy, he suggested, well, how about for Advent we try adoriantum worship on a more wide scale? And that was, the kibosh was put on that from the Vatican, I think directly from Pope Francis. That, those sorts of things are, they're mystifying to me, I'll be honest. I'll just speak for myself.
But I think that, and this goes to what I was just saying, perhaps doing it on short notice for a brief period of time would do nothing but cause confusion and acrimony between people that love it and people that have no idea what's going on. And so I understand why the Holy Father might want to say, let's not do this, especially considering what he probably already started thinking about the practice of the Latin Mass on a broader scale. And so, you know, that would be confusing that we do this now, but then he's going to put out a modus proprio saying, so I don't know.
We'll have lots of weeks to, to bat these things around.
That's right. It is not my job to understand the Pope. It is my job to obey.
Right, right. Well, we really hope that you tell your friends to listen to this podcast, and we ask you to pray about signing up to take the class on Reclaiming Vatican II, or if you haven't studied the documents of Vatican II yet, think about doing the Vatican II documents course. Go to redsearadio.org/VC260 to sign up. It's free. You just have to buy the book, and the cost, and it's a very low price of entry, $20.
And until then, I hope that you will tune in to the next episode of The Deacon and the Doc, and we'll see if we can't find something else interesting to talk about, to sometimes disagree about, but always to be faithful about.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Deacon and the Doc podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please consider going to redsearadio.org/donate and supporting religious education for the domestic church.